like getting married, Nathan.
Careful now.
Exceptionally brilliant for a lot of people, and Mbappe has that quality.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quick start car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 10k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
Well, second half underway in Munich. Mbappe in the kind of position he wants to be in, cutting in off the left-hand side, taking on a defender. It's Hummels. Hummels, I think, has just held him off and he's had to check back. So that was a close run thing for a moment there. Don't think Hummels wants to be in a one-on-one too often with Mbappe this evening. 47 minutes on the clock. Second half just underway. France 1, Germany 0. Mats Hummels scoring the only goal of the game, and OG, obviously. I've just seen the full move at halftime. Didn't fully get to appreciate it in real time here. So the Pogba pass to set the whole thing in motion out wide to his fullback on the left-hand side for Hernandez, who ultimately puts in the cross that Hummels knocks into his own net off his shin. He can't sort his feet out in time. The Pogba pass is a joy. And if it wasn't Pogba, you might wonder, did the player mean it? But we've seen Pogba do these kind of passes outside of the boot so often. But I mean, he really cuts the corner. So you do wonder for a second, did he mean it? I certainly think he did mean it, because it's Pogba and the ball wasn't really on to Benzema in the middle. So it's an outrageous pass when you see it later on. And the other talking point from the first half, which may well have repercussions for the player on the ball right now, Antonio Rüdiger in the German defence. It's bizarre, really. I mean, this kind of stuff happened back in the day when there were no cameras at games. What he's thinking here, I'm not really sure, because he takes a couple of beats and sizes up the situation. And the situation is that he's marking Pogba. The ball is either in play or about to become in play. So Pogba's just sort of standing there. Rüdiger's standing there. And he bites him. He leans down and bites him on his back. Now, it's not a chomp, I think, and this is the level of analysis that's going on at the moment. I think Roy Keane on ITV has described it as more of a nibble than a bite. So they're analysing the extent of the bite. I still think a nibble is probably not great. So we'll call it a nibble. Rüdiger nibbles Pogba. And then he goes to put his hands up to, I mean, I can't believe I'm describing all these scenes, to grab Pogba's nipples and give them a squeeze. You would say Pogba felt the bite, because Pogba screams out before Rüdiger manages to squeeze his nipple. So I think Rüdiger's in trouble. These are some of the strangest sentences I have said on the radio. Pat Nevin's going to join us later on. Thankfully, Alison Rudd of the London Times is here to rescue me. I think I've described the bite nipple situation okay there, Alison.
You haven't resorted to calling it a kiss or a caress. I mean, let's get homoerotic.
Did you see it? I mean, what is he thinking with all the cameras? Oh my God.
I don't know. Because of that, I have to assume it was done more jestfully than aggressively. Okay. Because otherwise, as you've intimated, it does your head in thinking that a player could get away with actually trying to bite somebody these days. Ridiculous.
Okay.
But also quite funny. Also quite funny.
Yeah. Well, we'll go with the Roy Keane nibble at the moment and see what you make of the situation. So look, there's loads to chat to you about from an English perspective. I guess the real thrust of what we were having to chat to you about was Gareth Southgate, because it's amazing, really. I mean, and the trajectory of his career to the point where he is now, as Gary Neville describes him, have a listen here, as England's biggest asset. So this is Neville talking after the game against Croatia. This is, like, you know, I guess one of the most important voices in English punditry, English football, talking about the English manager, and it cannot get more glowing. So have a listen. Gary Neville here on ITV.
I was shocked by the inclusion of Trippier at left back, I think, like most people who saw the team, but I have to say, not in a doubting way, because I don't doubt the manager. I think that we've got an outstanding international manager who's got unbelievable experience. And I don't think there would be one person out of the 65 million English population would have picked that team today. And there are a lot of things that I would have said historically would have gone against England today. 2 o'clock kickoff, hot, 30 degrees, playing against a team that, to be fair, have passed us off the park in the last tournament and beat us. Experienced team, not having his best defender going into the actual game and not playing his best team going into the game. I thought he managed that game unbelievably today. And I think that we talk about the best player might be Calvin Phillips or Raheem Sterling, But our biggest asset is our manager, because I think that the clamour in past years would have been to go for Grealish. He's not even brought him off the bench, and he's made substitutions as well. So he's willing to make the unpopular decisions, the decisions that ultimately some of us don't think at times he should make. But he knows that group better than anyone. He knows how to get a performance and a result better than anyone. He's had now, was it, 7 or 8 tournaments under 21s as a coach, as a player, 85, 90 games as a manager now with England, vastly experienced, and I feel really comfortable with him there as an English fan, with him as the manager, and what he did today was really good.
So there you are, England's biggest asset. It did strike me on the day, Alison, Trippier at left back in particular, and then I suppose not bringing Grealish off the bench, even if Croatia had scored a late goal and it was a draw, or even if it had been a bad result, he would have been absolutely destroyed for the Trippier decision, and he would have known that in advance, and that makes it all the braver and I suppose ultimately all the more impressive.
Yes, it does. But I mean, he's not new to the job, is he? And he's, right from the word go, since he stopped being a player, he's got the measure of how the media work. He's a very intelligent and calm man. And I think if you know you're only ever built up so that you can be knocked down, he will have navigated his career really quite intelligently, knowing this. And there comes a point when you're a public figure and involved in English football, you have to, you know, you have to genuinely not worry about the reaction to the what ifs. That he's not going to succeed if he spends his time thinking, I'm going to get hammered if we don't win. I'm going to get hammered if. He just has to go with what he sees in training and the personalities he likes in his team. And I think if you step back from it, if we were not talking about England here, if we were talking about Holland or North Macedonia or any other country, we would probably be sort of thinking, oh, look at Gareth Southgate. Isn't he calm and wonderful? And hasn't he got strength of character? And isn't he principled? And there wouldn't be the forensic analysis that we give to the English team. Basically, Gareth Southgate knows no matter what team he picks, there'll be vast swathes of the media, vast swathes of supporters who disagree with that decision. You cannot ever pick the perfect England team to satisfy all the people who have a say in the build-up and in the aftermath. So he's just reached that point, I think, in his life, his career, where he just has to ignore that scenario that you just painted, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean, he really has reached that point if Trippier is going in ahead of Chilwell and Shaw, because, again, it would just be very difficult to explain if the result went badly. And Neville said two other kind of interesting things. He was saying, well, one, the pressure that's out there in the ether is hard to keep at bay. Like he was saying, it just does cross your mind that everyone wants Grealish in, and you might be looking at the subs bench and you see Grealish. It's just really hard to keep that at bay, which is understandable enough. But the other point he made was, said he and Roy Hodgson, in their time together, they were just throwing their hands up at the leaks from the dressing room. Like, how on earth they kept the Trippier decision quiet? I mean, hour before kickoff, the whole world goes, oh my God.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think probably this is one of those things that is used to beat Gareth with, actually, is that he spent a lot of his time making sure there is harmony in the camp and that there is a sense of team. Whereas in the past, I think almost all England managers have found it so difficult compared to being a club manager. Just physically how little time they have with the players. It's impossible to imprint any sort of creative design you might have or tactical acumen. You just sort of get them together and hope, and it becomes too much. I know Roy Hodgson really well, and he found, even though he knew he wasn't going to get much time with the players, it was something that he just constantly found difficult. Whereas Gareth Southgate, instead of sort of bemoaning the negatives that go with being the national manager, he's decided, what can I change? What can I actually do? Well, I can't work physically with them very much, but I can engender a sense of community. Mm. I can make them feel part of a different outfit where they all feel they like me and they respect me and my teammate. I mean, my backroom staff, we're all in this together. And he spent years doing this, years engendering this sense of community. And he's intelligent enough to know how to talk to each individual player on the level they need to be spoken to about their responsibility, you know, sort of saying things like, you're hurting yourself if you leak this. Mm. It might hurt me, but it probably hurts you more, actually. And so, you know, he's sort of gently hammered that through to them so that they feel that they are part of something. I mean, my worry has always been with Southgate that he's done all the political things beautifully, but quite, how good is he as an actual, you know, come the 90 minutes that really matter manager, is he? And I still think the jury's out in this tournament because I don't think Croatia were much of a strong opposition. So although it paid off in the end, I mean, there are many more hurdles to cover.
Yeah, and the generous draw of 2018, you know, can still be thrown at him in the knockout stages. In a parallel universe somewhere, Alison, there's no pandemic, there are fans everywhere, and Sam Allardyce is the England manager. You know, it's a certain set of circumstances have us where we are here today. So your memory, the initial reception to Southgate's appointment, certainly over here, felt like from afar, looking at the general reaction over there, was one of pretty uninspiring, a blazer, and God, England are really struggling to find a real top name and something inspiring.
Yeah, and that's why he's seen as a FA yes man, you know, somebody who won't rock the boat, somebody who lacks pizzazz because he's never going to do anything in the mould of Brian Clough and shake things up and make people feel thrilled and what's happening here. And he's not going to say the system's warped or wrong or needs to be shaken up. He's going to work with what he's got. But I think his advantages is that he's calm enough, young enough, intelligent enough to work with all the different groups he has to work with. So, I mean, I've been to a few England gatherings with the media and, you know, everyone loves him. I mean, I remember going to St. George's Park, not to see him, but to see Steve Holland, his assistant. Mm. And I was in the corner waiting for Steve to come and have a cup of tea. And Gareth, I'd brushed past Gareth in the corridor. And he was talking to someone, somebody about some business. And he actually came over to apologise for not interrupting his meeting to say hello properly. I mean, it is impossible not to like a man who has those manners. Mm. Then he let me interview him on the spot, even though I hadn't booked in to interview him. You know, he knows how to get on with people. So you can picture from that little scene that he gets on with the media, all the media, different types of media. He gets on with the stuffy blazer types at the FA. He gets on with young aspiring coaches at the FA. He can deal with young players. He can deal with the older players. He works hard, goes to lots of games. He thinks about the game deeply. I mean, you know, it's not difficult to see how he slowly and gradually made what looked like a very temporary, uninspiring appointment into a proper career. I mean, he's made being England manager a career, and England managers don't do that.
Yeah, to remind people of his management career, he did 3 years at Middlesbrough, 06 to 09, and ultimately that ended in relegation from the Premier League. And then he was out of work, really, for a number of years. He went into punditry, and the England under-21 job came along in 2013, did that for 3 years. And then, you know, Big Sam sits down for that fateful dinner with someone who's recording him, and the rest is history. Like, even, it's funny, Southgate himself, in his own autobiography, said, "Some people are born to rebel, others to conform. I was a conformist." Which makes it so ironic that, like, discreetly here, he's leading almost this kind of a rebellion against the orthodoxy of the English team over the last number of decades. Go back as long as you want, in that the orthodoxy was keep your head down, say nothing. Whereas this group here are the most politicized group that there's ever been, may ever be, you know, it's incredible. Like, I've got clips coming up of the Home Secretary to play to you and Tyrone Mings responding. We'll get to them in a second. You know, it's kind of extraordinary that, you know, Mr. Conformist and Mr. Don't Rock the Boat, in a kind of subtle way here, is actually into uncharted territory with how he lets this team express themselves.
Yeah, but it's that is part of feeling like you're a community. How else do you do it unless you make the people involved feel like when they're on England duty, they can be themselves and they're not there to be invisible and get on with it and do as they're told and be grateful for the cap or grateful to be in the squad. That they're with, you know, it's like a shortcut to friendship, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's not going to build trust and relationships with players. What he needs is somebody who's in the squad, doesn't get any minutes, but he suddenly needs them because of an injury in the 89th minute of an important game. He needs them to come on and give him everything. He needs to feel like they are truly, truly a squad where everyone feels they're playing a part. And you don't achieve that with how little time you have as an international manager unless you feel, make the players feel like when they're with England, it's a bit different.
Yeah.
And he's made that. He's made it a bit of a different and positive atmosphere. And it's never been like that before.
No, definitely not. And it's pretty genuine on his part, I would think, because there must be, because it is uncharted territory, there must be parts of him wondering if having Tyrone Mings getting into an exchange with Pretty Patel 2 or 3 days out from this huge game, is this a good idea? You know, there must be that seed of doubt there in him, but obviously he prizes the things you're talking about enough to take that chance and let the players, I guess, almost take a lead on this issue.
Oh, golly. I mean, I have a deep suspicion that when he comes to assess, you know, when he's 80 and he comes to assess what he achieved, he'll be more proud of, as you call it, the politicisation of English football. That will be what he'll speak of first, if he wins anything, what it is he has won.
So I mentioned this Mings Pretty Patel situation. So Pretty Patel here talking about the booing of the knee. We'll have a listen. This was in the last 24 hours or so.
I just don't support, you know, people participating in, you know, that type of gesture politics to a certain extent as well. It's all well to support a cause and, you know, make your voices heard. But actually, quite frankly, and we saw last year in particular with some of the protests that took place, I speak now very much from what I saw in the impact on policing. It was devastating. And not only that, I just don't subscribe to this view that we should be rewriting our history. You know, pulling down statues, the famous Coulson statue and what's happened there. Toppling statues is not the answer. It's about learning from our past, learning from our history and actually working together to drive the right outcomes.
The England fans are right to boo?
Well, that's a choice for them, quite frankly.
Would you be booing if you're in the stands?
I've not gone to a football match to even sort of, you know, contemplate that. But I maintain my point, quite frankly, that we learn from our past. We don't try and rewrite it.
So, I mean, look, they're thrown all the tropes there. She's somehow likened the taking of the knee, which the players are just so expressly clear about, is just a stand for equality, a stand against racism. They're not commenting on what should happen to statues. They're not getting into any of that stuff. But that's where she's taken it there pretty quickly. And Tyrone Mings, naturally enough, then is asked about it today in his press conference.
To the Home Secretary, I don't really have a direct message. I mean, we spoke and she invited me onto a Zoom call once, where she seems so interested and engrossed in players' kind of point of view and what we could do more to kind of tackle these sort of issues. But at the same time, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, and the Home Secretary is one of many, many people that oppose us taking the knee or refuse to defend it. So we have our own set of beliefs and what we think we can do to help them, or be players that can be influential and can kind of stand up for what we believe in. And understandably, when you have such strong beliefs, there will be opposition to that. So we've spoke about it a lot. We've spoke about trying to educate or trying to inform the minority who refuse to acknowledge why we're taking the knee and want to boo it. But at the same time, in Wembley, there was a hugely positive reaction to us taking the knee as well. And I don't think that should be overshadowed by the minority that refuse to accept what the reasons are or don't agree with them.
It's a absolutely fascinating subplot, Alison, all this going on. Like, I don't think Gaza and the lads were getting into this kind of stuff 25 years ago.
And they were getting into ridiculous ways to celebrate goals and dentist chair and things like that. But, I mean, Tyrone Mings, he is the reason that the knee is taken before every game. It was his decision. It was his idea. He went to the board at Aston Villa and said, what can we do? This is, you know, the death of George Floyd. We need to show that we find this abhorrent, the treatment of black people across the world. What can we do? And just to be a player, to actually, you know, knock on the door of your chief exec and to actually suggest that, and then go to the opposition and say, Sheffield United, I think, on day one, and say, do you mind, you know, do you think you'd go along with this? It was all done very quickly because it came from the heart. And so it's not, you know, it's not just that Gareth Southgate has changed the political landscape. What he's done is he's nurtured what's already there for a lot of players and found a way to make their interests and things that, you know, upset them or make them feel political, made them feel valid. And, you know, he's very much a believer in, if you're annoyed or you bottle things up or you just conform without believing in it, you're not going to have a very good team. You want everyone to feel, you know, if you're brave enough to say, let's all kneel, then you'll be brave enough to say to, you know, the goalkeeping coach, I don't think we're doing that right, or to question tactics. And, you know, the history of good teams is littered with players who are talented but also vociferous and have dialogues with their coaches and ask why are we doing it this way?
Yeah.
Can we not do it that way? You have to evolve. In some way, you have to make... The only way England are going to win anything is if the players play greater than the sum of their parts, and by and large, they never do. And this is why it's so annoying usually watching them. And then you watch a small nation like Iceland at the previous European Championships and you think, hang on, they're the size of Croydon. How come they can do this? It's because they play greater than the sum of their parts and they tap into things that have nothing to do with football. One of the reasons Iceland did really well was because they have a huge connection with the people in the stands. Every player knows at least five people watching them because it's such a small nation. And rather than using that as a thing to think, oh, aren't we, we must be rubbish, we're so small, they decided to turn that into a positive. Look at us, we have a bond with the people watching us, and they made it work for them. Well, you can't do that as an England player, we're too big a nation. But what you can do is develop something else beyond just turning up representing Liverpool or Manchester United. You are turning up to England, and England's a different place where you can express yourself, and therefore perhaps, you know, let's whisper it, play better than you do week in, week out.
Priti Patel, of course, I mean, popular over here for saying that potential food shortages in Ireland should have been used as leverage to try and stop us implementing the backstop. So big fans of Priti Patel over here, I can tell you. Tyrone Mings, not in any way rattled, is what jumped out there, like almost a withering kind of tone of voice at times. You could see this is not affecting him at all, which is pretty impressive, really. So, yeah, Southgate kind of behind all that in his own way and listening and not being afraid, you know, not being so afraid as to say, guys, we don't need this hassle, stick to the football, all the old traditions he would have grown up in. So let's get on to the kind of last key question, I suppose. You said the jury's still out of touch on the footballing side of things. How are England going to do over the next couple of weeks, Alison?
Well, I think it's going to be tough. I really do. I think the one good thing from an England point of view is that I do feel Scotland used up quite a lot of their emotional energy in their opening game. And they played a bit like I thought they were going to play against England. I mean, it was blood and thunder and going in for tackles that, you know, you wouldn't normally go in for. Definitely a team playing with passion. And playing with more vigour than a lot of those players do for their clubs. I mean, it was you know, absolutely, this is a big moment in our history. Let's give it all. So I think England will be quite pleased what they saw there, because I don't see how Scotland can go up a notch from that. So what you do from England's point of view is you've seen sort of the highest level of intensity. I just can't believe Scotland's levels can be more intense than that. But they could get luckier than they were, and they could certainly be fitter and more aggressive than Croatia were. And Croatia very kindly just have not evolved since the World Cup. So they were not quite the opponent they have been in the past. I don't need to tell Gareth Southgate this. You do not take too many positives from the game against Croatia. But there was a lot wrong with that Croatia team. And Scotland, I don't know, I think they'll be running more. There was no outlet on the wing for Croatia. And Scotland have Andy Robertson, who was, might have been player of the match in defeat had there not been two wonder goals in that game. So there'll be different challenges. There'll be more emotion on the pitch. The one good thing for England, I think, is Scotland peaked on an emotional and intensity level too soon.
Okay, well, we'll see on Friday night. Alison Rudd of the London Times. Thanks so much, Alison. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers. 72 minutes gone in Munich. Still France 1, Germany 0. Mbappe had a brilliant goal ruled out for offside, but it was a great strike cut in from the left, curled it into the far corner on his right foot, but then offside flag went up. So 72 minutes gone still. 1-0 to France against Germany in Munich. Okay, 75 minutes on the clock. France 1, Germany 0 is still where we are in Munich. That music means Patrick Nevin is with us. Hello.
Hello, how are you doing, Joe? Are you well?
Very well. I got to watch the first 45 minutes of this game, really enjoyed it. Second half looks even livelier. I know you're watching it there.
I wasn't as enamoured with the first half. It was a bit of a game of chess for me, but the second half is much, much better, a bit livelier. Teams are having to go for it a little bit now. Much better for Germany in the last 10-15 minutes. They've created a few chances and they've just brought on Sané and Werner. So they lacked pace. They don't lack pace anymore.
Would you say you've been impressed with France?
Yeah, they've really controlled. They've been a better team. Without being absolutely brilliant, I think it's the first game of a tournament. They're playing their way into it. They're feeling their way into it. And they've done just about enough. I think there's loads more to come from certainly a number of the players. Kante's been Kante. He's unbelievable. It's amazing how many tackles he wins. And Pogba's showing some really nice moments as well. But you can tell that Mbappe's got a bit more to come. He was very unlucky. He scored a second goal there, but he was just marginally offside, but it was a brilliant finish. So you get the feeling they're beginning to cruise into this competition, but certainly the Germany are coming back a little bit at them at the moment.
Tell me Pogba meant that pass in the build-up to the first goal.
Yeah, I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
The reason why I think he did is because about 3 or 4 minutes afterwards, he played a very similar one. I know why you're asking the question, because he's too central to it. You know, the ball's not to his right or to his left. He's not get the kind of the normal back left kind of his foot. But no, absolutely, he's done that. He's kind of pinged that out there at that sort of angle. It's really interesting because as a defender, you don't read it because you don't think he's going to play that ball. So it's a great ball out there. He's looked really good today.
How much trouble is Rudiger in, do you think?
I think it's hard to prove that he bit the opponent. He certainly put his mouth there. But there's, you know, it's causes the angle. If they find an angle where the teeth are out, he's in massive trouble. He may be absolutely massive trouble. But what are you putting your face in there for anyway, in the back of the defender? I mean, anyone who hasn't seen it yet, it's a bit stupid. It's a bit ridiculous. I mean, he's absolutely whipped up, Rudiger. He's trying to get as close as possible. It's, you know, and understandably, he's up against a very good player and he's given him no space. But it kind of helps when you're kind of got your mouth on his back.
Yeah.
It's kind of ridiculous. But he's like that. I'm not saying he's the type of person that bites people, but he's a type of person who, I think they call it touch tight. Well, that's beyond touch tight.
Because without getting too into the weeds of analysing what happened, what would suggest he did bite Pogba is that Pogba screamed before Rudiger's right hand got up to squeeze Pogba's nipple. You know, Pogba felt something. Now, I don't know from that angle where Rudiger's left hand is. So maybe the left hand is simultaneously squeezing somewhere while the mouth is not biting. But if the left hand isn't squeezing anything, then Pogba felt the biting action. Again, these are weird things to be talking about on the radio, but that's my analysis of that moment.
I was there the day Suarez did his second bite over in Brazil.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I was just really? Have you honestly done it for? It wasn't the second. There was a third time actually in his career that he'd actually done it. So if they find that Rudiger's done that, he's in massive trouble. He's out for games, definitely out for games, if not the tournament.
And a word in Germany then. So you're impressed with France? Like Germany coming into this tournament written off? Like Didi Hamann is doing Irish TV at the moment, and he's promising the Irish nation not to expect much from this German team. What have you made of them?
Every German I've heard talking about it said exactly the same thing. You know, they had some bad results in the build-up. You know, they lost to North Macedonia. And then there was that hammering they had by Spain as well. But there's a lot of decent players there. Do they look like a team, like a German team of old, who you completely trust to do the right things and are like a machine? No, they don't look like that at all. But have they got a number of good players and are they dangerous? Absolutely. It's... And certainly, I still think France are my favourites. Nothing that I've seen tonight, and nothing that I've seen in all the games that I've been watching, has changed my mind in that. However, Germans getting out of this group, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, like a lot of people, I think Portugal, Germany, and France may all get out of this group the way it works.
Yeah. France are starting to threaten on the break here last couple of minutes, so that could be trouble for Germany. 10 minutes to go, still 1-0. That Mats Hummels' own goal and 20 minutes the difference. So we won't dwell overly on the Eriksen situation because I think it's been talked about a lot. In fact, I wasn't going to ask you about it at all until I just happened to see. Were you doing commentary on the game?
I was.
On radio?
I was for Radio 5 and BBC.
Horrific. TV, at least you can let the pictures do some talking for 10 seconds here and 20 seconds there. Oh my God. How do you cover that on radio for 15 minutes?
It was difficult, particularly the moments when it happened, because I think I spotted right away, just about within a couple of seconds, what had happened. I was there covering when Mark Vivien Foy died. So, and I've been at, I was at Motherwell, we lost one of our kids to a hypertrophic cardiomyopathy as well. I was involved in the setting up the system of testing through the PFA in England and helping set it up in some of the clubs in Scotland as well, particularly at Motherwell. So I kind of knew what was going on quite quickly. The difficulty then is you can't actually say that because family might be listening. You know, and friends are listening. So you have to explain how this is a very serious situation and trying to explain to the commentator without actually saying it out loud, like, beware, this is very, very, very serious. So it was a very difficult thing to deal with and commentate on. And fortunately, I think on our channel, we were able to deal with it quite well. What was difficult was when eventually the TV did leave the pictures, we could still see the pictures, obviously doing it in radio. We could see what was going on, and we saw the electric shocks and things like that. So knew exactly how serious it was. And I'll be honest with you, I thought we'd lost him. And we had. He had gone, you know, without a doubt. So it was an extraordinarily difficult thing to talk about. But, you know, who cares? You made it. That's it. Nothing else matters, you know. Difficult thing to do, but I don't care. I just wanted him to get through it, and he came through. And the percentages, I mean, you often talk about, I talked to medics about it before, the percentages that survive when you need, you know, to be resuscitated in that way, they're very small. They're extremely small. Even in a hospital, they're very, very small, the numbers that come back. And even those that come back don't always come back fully themselves again. You know, there's hospitals that do brain damage and various things. So you can't say Christian's been lucky, you know. I played golf with a guy. He's a doctor. And similar thing happened to him about 6 months ago. And he happened to do it beside a defibrillator with two heart specialists walking by. And I still play golf with him every week now. But he was gone for 45 minutes. Wow. It's just... When you're lucky, you celebrate it. So I think I've said to a few people, I don't care about all the results in this. You know, I'm interested in them all, but there was one result we wanted and we got it. Christian made it.
Yeah, it certainly changes the memory of those images you have in your mind, which is good as well. So to matters far less important, ultimately, your Scottish heart and the hearts of all the Scots yesterday took a kicking 2-0 defeat to Czech Republic. You were in the stadium for this as well. This is great. You're kind of covering all these games for me firsthand. So the shit goal, the Second goal, obviously. First goal was good. The second goal, though, is Marshall at fault? Was the lob always on? What was the perspective in the stadium? And give us your sense of that one.
Well, first of all, where I was commentating from was the back row of the top of the stand. So I've seen you've got the whole view of the thing behind you. And it was quite clear that Marsh was very, very high all the way throughout the game when Scotland were attacking. And uncomfortably high, you know, really. And in the end, you know, a number of people said, you know, you blame the Scotland centre-back for having Hendry, for having a shot when he shouldn't have. And he shouldn't have. He should have played out wide. That was the right thing to do. But it's funnily enough, Hendry had actually scored recently and also he'd hit the bar just before that with a shot. So you kind of know where his head was, going for a shot that wasn't on, but he made the wrong choice. But then it breaks. If Marshall's 15 yards deeper, he gets back. There is actually no need to be as high as he is. He's about 5 to 10 yards away from the centre circle. You're not adding anything there. Mm. You know, if you're a sweeper keeper, that's actually still too high. You can be a sweeper keeper, you know, and you can do that, you know, on the D or just outside the D of the 18-yard line. So, you know, a lot of keepers are doing it now. Those who say he wasn't in the wrong, I urge you to look at every goalkeeper in the tournament from here on in, including Marshall himself. Mm. Will they be standing in that position? And I suspect not. And it's almost the definition of you're too far out of your goal when you get chipped from there. So I feel sorry for him because he was brilliant. He had a great game, by the way, Marshall. And I'm just watching, tapping for
Benzema.
The French. Looks like they've gone 2-0 up, which kind of kills that game. Yeah,
it does. It's being checked at the moment. I'm a few seconds ahead of you, so I didn't want to interrupt you there. It has been given. Yes, it has. So I mentioned they were kind of coming at the Germans on the break a bit, so it was Pogba balled through to Mbappe right-hand side. He passed to Benzema. Benzema gets a tap in and... Oh, it's been ruled out. Sorry. It's gone. Offside. Excuse me. There we are.
Another angle of it. See, that's the problem with Mbappe. It's too quick.
Yeah.
He didn't actually need to go that early.
Yeah.
So they've got away with another one. And that's two that they've got on the break. Yeah. But I think you spotted it right. The Germans have changed the system. They've been ultra positive or ultra offensive now. So they're going to leave themselves at the back, especially with someone like Mbappe who dreams of playing in that situation. Mm. So they're in that danger. But in that danger, absolutely, you've got to take a chance. You're 1-0 down. There's only 5 minutes to go. You've got to go for it. There's nothing wrong with that. But they've got away with another one. The Germans are a bit lucky there. And talking about luck, he said, quickly moving on, the Scots didn't have any luck in the game. Scotland actually played... like Scotland played. They didn't play badly in the game. They played as they do. They played as they have done to get. And now if you're Wales, if you're Ireland, if you're the North, if you're Scotland, we all know this feeling. You got to do your best in every single game. You got to put every ounce of energy into everything, a single game, and you got to carry the luck. And you need them all. Mm. If you're going to get through, you need them all. Scotland got all of them to get this far. And they beat Czech Republic the last three times. They played them twice in the last year or so. But their luck ran out. And to be honest, you know what it's like with newspapers? They'll be there ready for a headline. But in actual fact, Scotland just played like Scotland and didn't get the finishes. And there was a weird goal, a cracker, but also a brilliant headed goal by Schlick. That was a great headed goal that he scored as well. Maybe Scotland just need everyone. Had Tierney been on, it may have been slightly different for them, but it's all big ifs. That's where Scotland are just now, and somehow they need to come back from that and go to Wembley. And once again, I'll be there. I'll be travelling down to Wembley for that one. And I'm not exactly doing it with a jaunty step at the moment, I'll be honest with you.
I was having a look, because I didn't get to see this game in full working on the show yesterday. I did catch the halftime analysis on Irish TV, and they were of the opinion that the Scots had created all the better chances. It was Damien Duff and somebody else, I can't quite remember now. And then the header was the header, and they were a bit unlucky to be 1-0 down at halftime. And then, as you said, the goal in the second half is the goal. But looking at the Scottish media slash even just like... the comments section, just to get a feel for where the public are, which I know is maybe not the greatest barometer at times. But so the accusations being levelled at Steve Clarke now are things like, well, you know, people are saying things like, it was like watching him back in his Kilmarnock days, boring defensive team, tough to beat, no kind of bravery about the performance. And suddenly, as often happens in these situations, the players on the bench are elevated. So it's like, where was Gilmore? Should have played. Nathan Patterson, 19 years old, right back for Rangers, loads of pace, throw him in there. Why wasn't Che Adams playing? David Turnbull, 21-year-old player of the year for Celtic, even though he didn't play the whole season with Celtic, he made that big an impact. Where was the, you know, the creativity and all this kind of stuff? That's what's been thrown at Clarke, that this was conservative, tough to beat mindset, and he has some questions to answer. Is any of that fair?
Yeah, it's fair, because that's how they got there. That's exactly how they got there. That's a perfect description of how Clarke has got his team working. Had they been more open, they wouldn't have got this far. I mean, there isn't enough creativity within the group to get this far. I mean, there are one or two creative players around there, Forrest in particular, but he's been injured for large parts of the season. Let's take each one of those players that you mentioned there in a row. I mean, you talk about, first of all, Billy Gilmore, right? Billy, I would be delighted to see him play, but he's not a creative who'll make lots of goals for you. He's a kind of more of a Jorginho who'll keep everything ticking in the midfield and keep that going. So that's, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah.
And who are you going to drop for Billy in that situation? McTominay? I think not. McGinn, look at the season he's had. I doubt that. And Armstrong's the other one in that midfield. And Armstrong's another one who this season's been brilliant for Southampton, probably had his best season. So I'm not convinced by that. I would go along with the fact that I would think Dykes, he makes you play long. He's a big old centre forward, technically limited. In comparison to Che Adams, very technically limited. So I would have played Che Adams from the start. So absolutely with that. The other one, you know, certainly you're talking about the right back area. And I'm not going for that. The reason being, I think within a couple of years, Patterson, without a doubt, is going to be the right back. In fact, maybe even next year, he'll be the right back for Scotland. He's a lovely player, right? But see, if you, this is the class of hindsight. See, if you put him on and he gets done because of a wee bit of naivety.
Yeah.
It's the old, oh, what was Stephen Clarke thinking?
Yeah.
You know, you when you lose, you cannot win. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Especially with hindsight. The biggest problems I could see with them is some of the players didn't play absolutely to their potential. And that, you'll know that I love John McGinn as a player. He's a fabulous player. And he's a joy to watch because he's effort and everything he gives you. He didn't have a great game. You know, he was kind of snuffled out of it by Suchet. And Scotland rely a lot on him to get forward and give a little bit of support to the strikers. As I say, it's a huge miss when you don't have Tierney there. Big change he makes, because you play out for the back a bit more when you've got Tierney. And also he overlaps outside Robertson sometimes, which is an incredible danger that he's been recently. So, I mean, I think with the limited squad that they've got, they just had one of those days where the ball didn't drop for them. They weren't absolutely outplayed. There wasn't much between the teams except two rather good moments of brilliance from a centre forward. The bit that always gets me with Scotland, so we had 23 years now, right, it's taken them to get to a championship, and every single manager's basically been called a dud after a while, and you're thinking, it's not the manager. Yeah. Really? Honestly, after this long, do you think it really is the coach? So in actual fact, they're a bit unlucky. They needed to carry a lot. They didn't carry much luck in this one.
Yeah.
Did they deserve to win? No, they didn't deserve to win. They didn't deserve to. Could it have been, would you be surprised had they got a draw or sneaked a win? No, you wouldn't be surprised at that at all. But that's what happens when you're a team of that limited capability.
I've got 2 minutes here, so it's probably a broad, complicated question, and you could go into each team and the tactics and what you're seeing in different ways, but we'll try and maybe crystallise the answer a touch. So you've got 2 minutes. In terms of the overall standard, like, you know, a lot of pieces written before saying international football is way behind Champions League football, technically, tactically, all that kind of stuff. It feels like a pretty decent standard that we've kicked off with. What have you made of it?
Yeah, I mean, the teams that surprised me, I was surprised that the Dutch actually started better. Then they had a little sort of dodgy little period. The thing that's getting me most is the amount of teams that are playing with a back three, which can lead to quite dull football. So that always looks technically good because they all do lots of passing and they all, and it looks good. And after a while, you get a bit bored with it, you know, and you think, oh, come on, just get on with a game of football after a while.
Yeah.
It's a Euros, have a dig, have a go. We won't know for sure if that's going to change until probably the last game of the, you know, this qualifying round, you know, the group stage. When they get by that, you'll find out more. I think it's been okay. Some of the games have been dull. They always are. Some of the teams you think, well, you are making up the numbers. You ain't going to get very far. And that's fair enough as well because it's a big tournament. When I played in it, there were 8 teams. And look at it now. So you used to the creme de la creme. So don't compare it with that. But I think his standard's been okay. It's been good. And a lot of the best players around. I think it is sort of the vast majority of teams have got a good number of good players, but I think this is the year we're not going to get the surprise. You got the Portugal. Before that, you got the Denmark. You even got the Greece to win it. This doesn't feel like that kind of thing. It was just that bit easier in the past, particularly to do it when there's fewer teams and you kind of fluke your way through. It's kind of hard to do that now. There's too many games. There's too many good teams.
Okay. Well, listen, the clock's against us. We will reconvene next week, I think, on the back of, obviously, Friday at Wembley. So best of luck. I mean, it'd be a lot of fun if you can surprise everyone. Pat Nevin, thanks a million. Enjoy Friday. Cheers, Pat. Pat Nevin there. So 94 minutes on the clock, 2 minutes to go. Still France 1, Germany 0. Football on Paddy Power is with thanks to their Save Our Game, donating 10k to Irish football for every goal England score at the Euros. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. So France 1, Germany 0.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power's Save Our Game. England's goals total 10k so far for Irish football. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Quickstar car insurance that's ready when you are. Sort your policy anytime online at GetsetGo.ie.